Welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. I'm Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. Today, I'm very pleased to have with us Bill Trenkel, and Bill is the president of the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors. And the topic, of course, today is marine surveys. We had a request for this topic, and it is a hole that we've kind of left in all of the information we've put out on our podcast about the boat buying process. So we thought it was a great idea, and Bill thankfully was willing to help us. So before we jump right into the conversation, I do want to take just a moment to recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Bill Trenkel, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure, Kimberly.
We appreciate it because this is a topic that I think confuses a lot of boat buyers, particularly if they have never bought a boat or at least not one that really warranted the full survey process. So start though, introduce yourself to us a little bit more. Tell us about yourself and your experiences as a marine surveyor.
Well, I grew up around the water. On Long Island Sound on the East Coast, and I went to New York Maritime College at Fort Schuyler because of my interest in boats and boating that I acquired from my dad, who was in the Navy. So I studied marine engineering and at New York Maritime College and graduated degree with an engineering and a U.S. Coast Guard unlimited engineer's license, steam and diesel. At the time, I'd also been on the sailing team and had raced small boats, and they had a great fleet of boats there that we got to race, but we also worked on every day and all winter long. So I learned a lot of skills about taking care of a lot of different kinds of boats, besides the ones I had learned when I was growing up with my dad's boats. So I led me into a career in boating. I ended up doing the America's Cup with Dennis Connor, 8 America's Cups with Dennis Connor, and also campaign racing boats for the Admiral's Cup and Kenwood Cup. A lot of big racing events. Was involved with two Whitbread Round the World Race campaigns as the manager, designing, building, and campaigning the boat around the world. So I kind of was in the professional sailing world for many years, but from very much from the technical side, because I was an engineer, that part of those racing programs, that was a big part of my involvement, was the technical side. And so when I finally retired from the America's Cup after the 2003 America's Cup in Auckland, New Zealand, I was looking at what I was going to do next. Now, I was working with some startup companies, but I had a friend who was a marine surveyor who had actually surveyed some of our boats after some accidents, and it was always interest me that career. So Todd Schwede was he had a company called Todd and Associates in San Diego, and so I met with him. We talked about it, and it seemed like it was a good fit for my skill set and experience, because I had done everything from the designing, building, campaigning, being a boat captain, sailing across the oceans. So it was a natural fit for what marine surveyors do, which is, besides just doing pre-purchase surveys and insurance surveys, we also do a lot of damage investigations. And that's a big part of what we do, is the forensic investigations of why boats blow up, sink, fail, how collisions happen, who's at fault, those type of things. So it was a natural fit. So I started doing that in 2004, part-time, then got more into it. And by 2006, I was an accredited marine surveyor with Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors and doing it pretty much full-time, working with Todd Schwede as a mentor, who was a very experienced surveyor. So it was a great opportunity for me to really learn. Even though I had the technical skills, I had to learn how to put those into writing and write proper reports and express things properly, that in the way they are done in the tradition of marine survey, which is, it's very specific how reports have to be written and presented and what information should be in a marine survey. So that's kind of what I've been doing that now. So, it's 16 years now almost that I've been doing it, and I've really enjoyed it. It's a very interesting, every day is different.
Yeah. And that's obviously quite an extensive boating pedigree. So thank you for sharing that with us. And we're certainly glad you're willing to share some of that experience with us today. We hope that most loopers are going to need a pre-purchase survey, not so much a forensic survey after something goes wrong. And then we're going to focus on that today is the pre-purchase survey. So for those who are new to boating, perhaps new to this whole process, the best way we can kind of equate that to something folks are a little bit more familiar with is it's like the home inspection if you were buying a home. So how do you recommend that purchasers go about finding a surveyor? Because obviously they need somebody who is very good at what they do and somebody that they can trust. So what's the procedure usually for finding that right surveyor for them?
Well, the best way is to talk to other people you know that have boats and have had surveys. It's not the best thing is to ask your yacht broker for a surveyor recommendation because there's a little bit of a conflict there because the broker's trying to sell the boat and the surveyor is trying to find out if there's anything wrong with the boat. So, you know, there is a case where sometimes surveyors, they work too closely with the brokers. So it's better to get an independent recommendation. You know, you could go to a boat yards are also a good place to find out who the best surveyor in town is. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to get a pre-purchase survey because we do in our insurance claims work, a lot of times we'll end up with an insurance claim and find out somebody just bought the boat and they bought it without a marine survey and they didn't know that the whole back end of the boat was rotted out and the rudder was going to just pull out of the back of the boat or something like that. So right. Very important to get the survey, and it's good to get a recommendation from boat yard or boating neighbor or somebody else who's had an experience with a particular surveyor.
Now, as we mentioned, you're the president of the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors, or SAMS. How important is it that the marine surveyor be accredited, and is SAMS a good resource for finding a good surveyor?
Yes. You know, once you choose a surveyor, you want to make sure they are an accredited marine surveyor, either with SAMS or with NAMS, the National Association of Marine Surveyors. Those associations, their surveyors are accepted by the banks and the insurance companies because we have an accreditation process. There's an apprenticeship and there's testing and continuing education and a very strict code of ethics that we enforce very closely. And so the insurance companies and banks know that, so they want to have surveyors there that are done that are actually accredited. There are some other surveyor associations out there that don't really have real accreditation. They're basically online accreditations, and some of those will not be accepted by the insurance companies and banks. So you really do want to make sure that you get a NAMS or a SAMS surveyor. You can go to the SAMS website. If you go and you search in your area, you will actually find a listing of the surveyors. One way to proceed in trying to find your surveyor is to print out that list and then talk to the boat yards and your neighbors and say, do you know this surveyor? What do you think? And get their recommendation on a few different options because surveyors are generally very busy. So you can have a long lead time. You know, we'll get a call. Oh, I'm having my boat hauled out tomorrow. I'm trying to close this. You know, can you come do my survey? But right now, all the surveyors are very busy. The market's pretty hot for buying and selling boats. So the pre-purchase surveyors are really tied up, and it could be a couple of weeks before you can get one. So you want to have a couple options when you're doing your exploration and try to do it as early as possible.
Yeah, you mentioned searching your local area. For a lot of Great Loop boats, the brokers service all over, you know, different parts of the Great Loop and travel for the survey. That's less common for the surveyor themselves, though, correct? Typically, they work within a specific geographic area.
Yeah, well, it's just a matter of economics. You know, sometimes there'll be people who have a favorite survey and they'll fly. I've flown all over the country, you know, to do surveys all over the world because somebody wants me to do their survey. So it's just a matter of the cost, the travel cost that you have to add on to the cost of the survey. Sure. And so it's more convenient, cheaper if you use a local surveyor.
Right. And for those listening, just by the way, the Great Loop org, the forum for our members. We see lots of questions in there asking for if anyone knows a reputable or a good surveyor in a specific area. So that's another resource besides asking your friends and neighbors. Lots of the association members have been through this process and can help recommend somebody for you. Question we get a lot, Bill, is do you really need two surveyors, one for the engine and one for the hull? What is your take on that?
Yeah, it's really a good idea if you're buying a powerboat to have the engine surveyor and a hull surveyor, because it's a big job, and the hull surveyor is more of a generalist. And, you know, they look at a lot of different types of boats and systems all the time. Where the engine surveyor, you want to get one that's really kind of a specialist in your type of engine. If you have Cummins, you want to have a Cummins specialist or a Volvo Penta specialist. You want to have the right person looking at the engine that knows the nuances of engines, of those types of engines, that can really identify any problems. Where, you know, if you have a general mechanic or a general surveyor do your engines, look at your engine, they may miss something that's a more common problem with those type of engines. So I always recommend that they get an engine survey, because it's such a big part of when you buy a boat. You know, if you buy a $100,000 boat, and if you have problems with the engines, you could easily spend $100,000 replacing two big diesel engines. So it's worth spending the money to get the proper engine survey. And if you have a sailboat, it's also the same thing as with a rig survey. Most surveyors aren't going to go up the mast and do that as well, where you really want to have a specialist rigger do that. They have the right climbing equipment, and they look at masts all the time. So you want to make sure you cover the mast as well.
Good to know. Thank you for that. So kind of moving on to survey day, you mentioned that, you know, scheduling can be an issue if somebody's looking for a survey right away. And I would imagine scheduling gets even more challenging when you are dealing with two very busy surveyors and some brokers who typically the buyer and the seller's broker will often attend the survey, as well as the buyer and the seller. So getting everybody's schedules together, how does that typically work? Who's the person responsible for lining everybody up?
Yeah, it is complicated. Normally, it would be the buyer would actually be the one who contracts with the surveyor and with the engine, you know, the engine and hull surveyor, because he's the one who's ultimately, you know, he wants them to report to him. You know, you don't want the broker in the middle of that process. You want to be directly be the surveyor to the boat buyer.
Okay, makes sense.
So they're the ones who, you know, he's the one who really should be, the buyer should be doing that, and he has to, of course, coordinate through his broker with the seller's broker to arrange for the boat to get to the boatyard for the haul out and when the sea trial is going to be. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, and it takes some coordination. And you know, if there's two brokers involved, it can definitely get a little complicated. Lots of communication. You know, you can end up with a 50 email chain on setting up a major survey.
So, yeah, and it usually works out in the end. But kind of walk us through survey day. You know, you mentioned the haul out. You know, what's the start of the survey? What happens first? When is the sea trial? How does that typically progress?
Well, a lot of it just, it depends on the logistics for the location and the timing for everybody. If the boat, depending on when the boatyard's going to haul the boat, a lot of times the boat will get moved over to the boatyard in the first thing in the morning, and the surveyor can start the onboard part of the project. Quite often when the boat's being moved from the normal slip to the boatyard is when you'd have the mechanic on board. And you would do the underway trial while you're going from the slip to the boatyard. That's an opportunity to get the boat up, run the boat up to speed, see how it maneuvers and handles, and test the systems that have to be tested while the boat's underway. Things like trim tabs and steering systems, and test the bow thruster when you're coming into the dock. So those things can be done with the mechanic on board who's doing the engine survey. And then when the boat's tied up at the dock at the boatyard, they can continue on while the shipyard gets ready to haul the boat. Because sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen when it's scheduled. They say, oh yeah, we're going to haul it at 9 o'clock, and it may be 10 o'clock, it may be 11 o'clock. They don't, you know, depending on the last boat that they hauled, what kind of delays. So in the meantime, you can the surveyor can keep moving forward on the survey. And then once the boat's out of the water, then, usually the out of the water part of it is only about an hour. The surveyor will go around with a hammer and tap out the hull to see if there's any delamination. A good surveyor with a hammer can tap and find out if there's any weaknesses in the hull. And that's an important part of the survey. And a lot of things boat owners don't know and wouldn't do themselves. But you can find problems, especially if it's a wooden boat, you can find rot. If it's a fiberglass boat, you can find out if there's any delamination or weakness. The surveyor will be looking around at the running gear, the shafts, props, cutlass bearings, looking at the condition of the paint on the bottom paint, looking at the through hulls, the external portion of the through hulls. There's screens, there's flanges on the through hulls. You have to check the conditions of all those. There's through holes along the water line. Sometimes you have those white plastic through holes everybody sees, and there's cracks in those that people don't realize that unless you're really careful and looking at things that close, you may not realize there's a crack right in this through hole on the water line. And all of a sudden, that if that flange breaks off and the hose goes inside the boat, you can flood your boat. Because it's an air conditioning overboard or something like that. So, very careful look at all the fittings that around the, below the waterline and at the waterline will be done. And also the surveyor will be looking up at the boat from below the boat, looking up at the top sides, looking for any waviness, any distortions that could indicate that maybe some of the internal structure is coming loose or there's some general weakness in the hull that's distorting it. Because if you have a shiny boat and you look up, you can see the bulkheads and things along the side. And you'll also be looking for any damage, any prior damage, any repairs. You'd be looking at the underside of the hull to deck joint where the rub rail is and seeing if there's any rust dripping down there that maybe indicates there's water getting in there and deteriorating the fasteners. So, there's a multitude of things, but generally the bottom of the boat can be done in about an hour, looking for blisters. That's a common thing that happens, that people buy a boat and they haul it out and it has lots of blisters and everybody wants to know about that. My general feeling just quickly on blisters is, they're just something that's repairable, unless they're bigger than a silver dollar, then, they're just something that can be ground out and generally and patched.
And that's good to know, because I know, a lot of people really worry about blisters when they see them during the survey.
Yeah. And some people, the surveyor failed the boat because it had blisters. The way to look at it is we don't fail a boat. We find what's wrong with a discrepancy and then we make a recommendation, and then it's just what is the cost to do that repair?
Right.
So it may be there's blisters and that may be a $5,000 repair. And that's just something that has to get taken into account when the deal is closed.
Yeah. One thing I hear out there when I'm talking to brokers who attend so many surveys and some of the surveyors, owners knowing what to expect from the survey himself in terms of how interactive is this survey process. Do most surveyors want the purchaser to kind of step back and stay out of their way so they can get through the process? Or are they looking to have the purchaser right there by their side so they can show them the things they're finding? And if it's a do-it-yourselfer, sometimes they want to be digging into all the crevices and looking at everything side by side with the surveyor. Is that a personal preference for the surveyor, or is there a typical expectation that a surveyor might have on the level of interactivity with the buyer during the actual survey?
It really is a personal preference. There are some surveyors who want to, have the person there and talk to them the whole way through. Others, want to have the buyer there so they can show them when they find something that might be an issue, so that they're aware of it firsthand rather than just seeing it in writing or in a photograph. That's how I prefer to do it. If you're doing your survey and somebody's there asking questions the whole time, it distracts you from the flow of what you're trying to do. We're trying to look for a lot of these things are very subtle things that are wrong with the boat that we're trying to find. And if somebody's talking, you lose track and you don't see something, that it's pretty easy to miss something that you need to see. But it is nice when somebody's there and you can say, okay, see this, you know, see this frame, see this, the tabbing has come loose here under the V-berth, you know, see where this tabbing has come loose on this frame, you know, this has to be fixed. This is a structural problem, and you can show it to them firsthand. So they understand, you know, it's just a matter of time and money. It could be fixed, but it's, but just so you're aware that, you know, this is the big thing, you know, so it is sometimes nice to have the buyer there, but they have to kind of, you know, they can't be distracting the surveyor. And then some surveyors don't even want to have the buyer on at all. They want to just do their job, you know, present their report, you know, with the list of recommendations and photographs and just say, this is what I found.
Yeah. So
with COVID has changed it a lot because
absolutely, you know,
boats are generally small. And so it hasn't, most of the surveyors have had the people stay off the boat while they do the survey.
Right.
But then, you know, they might have them stand on the dock and then come on board very quick and say, okay, go look under there. And there's, you know, you'll see what I'm talking about, you know, what's going on with those through holes underneath in the head or something like that. So it's kind of changed how we do surveys a little bit. Luckily things are getting better now. So now we can get back to more of the normal mode of being on board together with the buyer.
Yeah. And as we do get back to that normal mode, so would you recommend then that if a buyer is a very hands-on type of person, likes to get their hands dirty, plans to do some of the maintenance work themselves, should they be asking questions when they're interviewing the surveyor beforehand, before they hire, to see how they're going to react to the buyer being that involved in the process? Is that something that most surveyors would have an answer for if you...
For sure. It's good for the buyer to say, well, you know, can I be on board while you do your survey? Mm-hmm. And then the surveyor can say, yes, you can be on board, but, you know, please wait for your questions until, you know, we get done with certain areas of the boat, then you can ask the questions. And, but, you know, please just stand back while, you know, then you can set up the guardrails that need to be set up,
right,
whatever,
perfect,
depending on the surveyor's preference.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break and play a message from one of our sponsors. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what happens after the survey day and what the reporting is like that you'll get afterwards. So we'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to Beneteau by Invitation. This new concept was born from a very simple idea. Offer your family an opportunity to meet ours in a fun, exclusive, and safe environment that mirrors the way our boats feel. Jump aboard our latest models, go for a private sea trial, and let us talk together about our common passion for the sea. There's a Beneteau by Invitation event coming soon to a harbor near you, so come experience what everyone is talking about. Contact your local dealer, get your boarding pass, and we will see you on the water.
We're back on Great Loop Radio. My guest today is Bill Trenkel. Bill is a longtime marine surveyor and the president of the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors, also known as SAMS. And he is walking us through the survey process today. Bill, one of the things we haven't covered yet is expected cost. And I know that can vary by region, but any kind of rules of thumb or benchmarks you can give us, and I know you're on the West Coast, but even if you can just tell us what's kind of the general thought in your area, even though that's not part of the loop, it might be helpful to set some expectations for some folks.
You know, it does vary greatly. You know, you'll pay more for a more experienced surveyor than you will for a more inexperienced surveyor. I'd say the range is probably about, you know, between $15 and $25 a foot ballpark. It's quite a big range, but,
That's okay. That's kind of necessary given that, you know, we're dealing with a large geographic area.
Yeah. And, you're going to pay more for a more experienced, a better surveyor. And some surveyors work by the hour. And so you might be paying, you know, $125 to $140 an hour to have them do the survey that way. They may prefer to do it that way. Mm-hmm. So it's just the preference of the surveyor and also as far as what they charge, because some are just retired guys doing this as a sideline. And then there's others who are professionals who do this as their business.
Okay.
And so they're going to be a little more expensive, but they're going to be the better surveyors.
Yeah. Right. So after the survey day is completed, the actual deliverable that the buyer can expect is the survey report. So how long does that typically take to prepare, and what should you expect to have included in that report?
Yeah. Well, usually most surveyors try to get the survey report done, you know, within about 3 business days after the survey. It's always something that should be discussed after the survey is done, because the surveyor, depending on his schedule, if he's, you know, traveling or something like that, that may be hard to do. So it's but it is good to communicate between the owner or the buyer and the surveyor of when that's going to be delivered. You know, there may be something like a closing date that's important, you know, that, that it has to be done by that date, and everybody needs to be aware. So it's, it can vary, but generally, you know, about 3 days after the survey, they should get a written report. And it should be, you know, it should be a very substantial report with a lot of detail. There should be photographs and, included. There should be a valuation of what the surveyor believes the vessel is worth. Fair market value. That may, the fair market value may not be what the buyer is paying for the boat, because that can be different. Mm-hmm. But that's what the surveyor, when he does his research, he's going to come up with what's called a fair market value, which is generally what the boat is worth, but it can vary a little bit depending on other issues involved. You know, whether it's a distressed sale or something like that.
Right. Now, you touched on this earlier, but I often hear people say, well, I surveyed the boat and it failed survey. Boat doesn't really fail a survey, correct? Issues are pointed out, but then it's up to the purchaser to either accept or reject the vessel based on what's found in the survey. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yeah. The I mean, sometimes the survey will be when they, you know, let's say the boat comes out of the water and they're, you know, they're, it's just the boat's completely delaminated or the big cracks around the keel. And, you know, it's going to be a big repair. And so the surveyor may let the buyer know, you know, this is a big deal. You know, this is, you know, and is this something you're willing, you know, what you're interested in is that, you know, we can fix, this can always be fixed, but it's going to be a certain amount of money and you can negotiate with the buyer or the seller on this. But, you know, sometimes buyers don't want to get into that can of worms. And so the surveyor will give them the opportunity and then they can actually stop the survey right there.
Okay.
And the surveyor will, you know, refund part of the survey money and not produce a report. So that's one way a survey can end. Another is that the, like a failed survey, I don't even know what a failed survey really is besides that, because you can have, any boat can have problems and it's going to have problems. And you're going to have a list of recommendations. You know, you can have 50, 100 recommendations on a boat and each one of those is a cost to repair. And that's something that could be negotiated in the deal, or the seller could say, well, it's as is, where is, and that's, then the buyer has to take that into account, what those costs to remedy all the recommendations will be. And the recommendations are set up, and basically usually most surveyors do it in 3 categories. And one would be regulatory, which would be fire extinguishers, flares, Coast Guard rules, you know, and federal regulations. The next one would be more maintenance related things that need to be done to make the boat safely operated and keep its value. And then that might be, you know, the through hulls are stiff and so they need to be maintained. It might be there's some tabbing, there's a crack at some tabbing that should be addressed, and there's some leaks around windows, those type of things. And the third thing would be the notes, surveyor notes. And these would be more like cosmetic issues that, you know, that aren't important to the operation of the maintenance boat, but should be taken care of. You know, if there's a lot of stress fractures in the deck, it's good to paint over those because you don't want water getting into them, but they're mostly cosmetic. They're not really affecting the structure of the boat.
Right.
So those, once you have those different recommendations, then you can figure out what the priorities are. And some the buyer's not going to worry about those notes as cosmetic things. They don't care. They, you know, they know they're paying the right, you know, they're paying the right amount for the boat. They can live with some cosmetic flaws. Uh-huh. Some people don't want to see any flaws. They want the boat perfect. Yeah.
Right. So that survey report and the recommendations from that are shared with others like financing and insurance, correct? So it can affect the terms of those services and also, of course, potentially negotiate a different price for the purchase. Is that all correct?
Yeah, it'll affect the purchase, and then and the insurance company, when they see the report, when you if you're using the report to get the boat insured, yeah, they'll look at the recommendation as well. Okay, and they may say, okay, you have to comply with these recommendations before we'll insure you. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to replace the fire extinguishers and put up to date flares and you know, they add a automatic bilge pump and add a carbon monoxide detector and a smoke detector. So they may have a list of requirements that have to be complied with before they'll insure it. And likewise, the bank the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's very helpful to understand the process. One thing I hear buyers very irritated with on a regular basis is that if a boat went to survey and for any reason was then rejected by the buyer, there seems to be an expectation from some, the next buyer, if they know that that boat's gone to survey, they expect to be privy to that survey report. Is that ever shared, or is that strictly the property of the potential buyer who paid for it?
It's the property of the buyer who paid for it. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. It's a confidential document between them, and he can share it as much as he wants or doesn't want to share it. Mm-hmm. You know, the seller is often tries to get the buyer who paid for that survey to, you know, let the next buyer use that survey. Surveyors don't really like that because when we survey a boat, it's surveyed the condition on that particular day of that survey.
Yeah.
And most of the surveys will have in the document will say for the express purpose, you know, of this client. And,
right.
And so it can't be used for insurance or bank or anything like that. Buying it may give you an idea of the condition of the boat, but you can't use it for financing or insuring the boat. So you have to get your own survey. Yeah. But a lot of times the surveyor will, if you can ask that same surveyor to resurvey the boat, and they'll do it for you at a discount.
Yeah. That's good to know, because there seems to be this perception, and I've heard it come up multiple times lately, that you know, perhaps the broker is actually hiding something from the previous survey, and it's just really not the case. It's just not the broker's call to release that or not release it. It's not their document. So I appreciate
exactly.
you straightening that exactly. out.
Yeah.
Probably the only question I have left for you is there anything that I didn't ask about that you would like buyers to know before going to survey? As a person doing lots and lots of surveys for them, is there anything you wish that they understood going in that perhaps is a misconception?
I think we kind of hit on them. I mean, the important thing is to make sure you get one before you mm-hmm. buy the boat, no matter how nice the boat looks and how the broker says this is a cream puff and, you know, you don't need a survey. This boat is perfect the way it is. You don't want to buy the boat without having a survey, because you're going to need it anyway if you're going to get the boat insured or if you're mm-hmm. going to finance it. So, you know, better to get it done before you put down your money and commit to buying the boat.
Absolutely.
And the contract should reflect that, you know, you're purchasing this boat. If you put a deposit down, it's subject to survey. And so that you're not committed until, you know, to buy the boat, unless the boat, you get a survey that you're satisfied with.
Yeah.
So that's one of the important things. And the other important thing is that the buyer understands that, you know, the surveyor does his best possible job that he can do, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't have x-ray vision. We don't, you know, we're humans, you know, sometimes you do miss things, you know, there's lots of things and lots of areas on a boat. And sometimes people get angry because they had a survey and then the surveyor missed something. And it was just, you know, it sometimes happens. And just, that's just part of the business. And the other is we talked about a little bit is how you're going to interact the day of the survey with the mm-hmm. surveyor, that should be understood. And so there's no hard feelings when the surveyor says, hey, if you could just stay on the dock, let me go through my thing, and then I'll come up on deck and I'll go through my list of recommendations with you. And then we can go down and look at them individually if we want, or just tag along with me and I'll show you things as I go through. So, you know, set those expectations day of the survey. Yeah.
Excellent. Bill, this is great advice. We've been chatting with Bill Trenkel. Bill is the president of the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors, also known as SAMS. He is with Todd and Associates out of San Diego. Bill, this has really been enlightening. It's not a subject we've covered in depth before, I don't think, that I can remember. So I really appreciate you sharing this expertise and this knowledge with us today. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you for the great questions.
Yeah, my pleasure. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us once again. We'll be back next week with another episode of Great Loop Radio. Until then, safe cruising.